Welcome back to the Mini PC Show, episode 81. My name is Brian. We have with us the Flying Rich and Door-to-Door Geek. Guys, welcome back. What's going on?
I've been hiding out in Orlando this week and actually got a whole bunch of notes here on what I've been up to. So cool stuff afoot.
Oh, for a second, I thought you meant like note phones.
No new note phone for me.
Gotcha. Well, I did get a new phone. I got a Huawei Honor P20 Lite. You guys know about the Singles Day that just happened in China?
No, tell us. I didn't hear about that.
It's like our Black Friday, but it's a day to literally celebrate single people. They beat their record from last year. Literally, they said in like the first 8 seconds, they went over $8 billion. And in the 24-hour time span, they had $30 billion worth of sales.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And the number one selling phone on that day was Honor phones, which I tell you right now, are the most constant, steady, solid hardware I've gotten outside of the U.S., except for OnePlus. So that's saying something.
So what are we talking about price-wise on this?
Well, I'll say this. It doesn't have NFC. It does have a fingerprint reader. It's 5.8 inches. The whole thing is basically nothing but screen on the front. It goes all the way down. It has this stupid little notch on top. It's $230.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Where's the fingerprint reader? Is it on the back?
Yeah, it is on
nice.
The back. It is
dead center.
On my last one, it was that, but it was also a four-way button. I could swipe down and it would activate the notification bar. I could I could push it in and it would click and it would do something programmable very easily through the interface, natural interface. Or I could hold it down and get a third thing. So like my hold down thing was to turn on the flashlight. That was great. This does not have that feature. This is just a fingerprint reader, which is fine.
You're paying... Now, what's the RAM and what's the CPU on that?
The CPU you've never heard of. It is a Kirin processor. It is a this year mid-grade, last year higher grade, not top grade, processor. It has 6 gigs of RAM, I believe. It has 32 gigs internal space. It's tiny. My last phone had 32. I never ran out of space, so I'm okay with that. Sure, I would have loved the terabyte, but it's $230.
Now, you don't have, you can't put a micro SD card in there?
Yep, I believe I can put up to a 2 terabyte SD card in it.
Hey, guess what I ordered today?
They were on sale. What was it, 128 gig SanDisk for 28 bucks?
I think, yeah, maybe it was 28.
I can't remember. I just know
It was 28 after tax and everything.
Yeah, I think it was like $21, so yeah. Plus tax.
Yeah, I'll say this is going to be the year of the storage because I do believe this holiday season we're going to have the craziest.
Ooh, like, well, I am definitely, I don't know if you've seen, I've quipped about, I was really ticked. I was ready to drop the hammer on buying 2 6-terabyte drives for like 97 bucks at Costco and they're all gone. And the only thing that was there was the 8 terabyte drives for 169. They are now $40 off.
Wow.
Yep. My buddy said part of the reason he didn't disagree with me was he finally got true MVNO drives in. There's the M2 format, and then there's the MVNO, I believe, format of drive, or NVM, and whatever. The M2 is slower. The other one is quicker. He has them, and he said he would now never use anything else in any machine he ever sets up for anybody ever again. Because everything was so unbelievably ridiculously quick, and you literally just like click it into the board in one screw. He said it's the most fail-safe way and quickest way for me to do anything to a computer. He like installed programs that typically take like a half an hour in like 2 minutes.
Nice.
Yeah. You mean NVMe, right?
Thank you, NVMe. I can never remember the acronym. NVMe, because there's M2 with the exact same form factor. And M2's fine, he said. It's fine, but it sure in the hell is not as fast as NVMe. That, he said, was crazy quicker.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't wait to get my hands on one of those.
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but for some things, it's okay to be a little bit patient with. And these, I think they're going to have enough of them around because we're already seeing fair amounts of boards with them on. So I think it's going to become a standard quicker than later.
What? All that's right. Not the pod nuts stocking stuffer for Christmas?
Oh, sure. No, no. No, but I will say this. I know, Rich, you have a list of stuff you want to go over, but I just want to throw one thing out there. And honestly, I did not do this on purpose, but link 763 in the notes, for some reason, has no description on it. And I can't explain why. I did not do it myself. You can go back and look at the history of the Google Doc. But this is a posting on XDA to a link, Chrome OS on any device, and you're using Chromify. And okay, I said for a while that we will never see full-fledged Chrome on anything that wasn't Google, like, approval, stamp of approval kind of thing. Well, I'm not right. What this thing is you have to download a real, authentic, genuine OS image from the web, which you can. You can download versions for specific models of Chrome stuff to a USB. You boot to it. It then does basically a factory restore. You have to download one of those images. And here's the Ryan bringing it here. It says it can work on x86. And then it says rock and
paper scissors.
Well, the rock chip.
I'm just kidding.
It said it would work.
Are you talking like the low end rock 64 or the rock pro?
Okay, reacquired files. Okay, the very first one says a official Chrome OS recovery image downloads on the right. Recommend EXE for high resolution Pyro Pro, on the same chipset family, example Intel ARM or ROC chip.
Ooh, that's cool.
But this doesn't only mean you can install Chrome OS on laptops.
Ooh.
And servers. What that means is we have the brand new ROC Pro 64 with the RK3399 chip on it, and that is a official Chrome OS build that is coming out. I don't think the hardware is out yet.
Wait, can I put this Chrome OS on my Pinebook?
I don't believe it's technically ROC chips that are on Pine boards.
Right.
But if they're compatible enough, yes, but I don't know which one to try is what I'll say. And this is not Raspberry Pi-able, at least that
I
can
interesting.
Guess.
Well, it does say ARM. It just says generic ARM.
Well, and you see, with ARM, ARM's different than Intel because ARM is a company out of, I believe, actually Britain, England, and they sell licenses and abilities, but what they sell is abilities to people to customize and add on and enrich the feature set. So it depends when they say ARM, what level of ARM do they support? Just the base? Because when you extend out and support more the like Samsung version or whatever version, you're going to see better performance and better results. Because you're going to be more highly optimized. So this, I literally just found today, have not a chance to try anything, but here's the whole thing. If it isn't stable, then I don't care about it. But it has to be stable. That's the only thing. And if it is stable, this is really cool because then basically Chromify is just a script you run. So, you know.
So it almost looks to me like there's too few steps for it to work right. But if that's it, that's pretty easy.
Well, I mean, we've known that Chrome OS and the Chromecast OS and Android basically at the core have a Linux kernel. That's the gist of it. I mean, that's it. So this is just somehow taking that, and I'm sure if one of us take and look at the script, we're going to be able to at least understand some of what's going on. Hopefully, it's not, you know, a 10,000 line script. And we can see what it's basically doing is just replacing some kernel stuff and then compiling a kernel, something that we know another McLaughlin that probably could never do that.
You're killing me, man.
I can't help it. I'm sorry.
So does this mean that you can install the latest version of Chrome OS with the Play Store and Android?
Well, see, this is where you start to now, I think, get into murky waters. Okay, here's the gimmick. You can absolutely download Chrome OS images with stuff built in. The question is when you very first turn on your Chromebook, which I don't know the answer to this, does it initiate the Play Store download or is it there by default and it just updates? Because anytime you do anything with any of these things, the first thing that has to happen is it has to upgrade and reboot. So I would hope so, but if you don't have a touchscreen, I really don't know how much of a enjoyable time you'd have in the Android experience.
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, I just had to bring this just because I don't know, and now I can't remember if I said this before the show or after. the reason I love this, and I had to bring this first and foremost, is because this proved me wrong. I personally feel like as human beings, one of the things we have the innate ability to actually do is to lie to ourselves for our entire lives and be okay with it because we convince ourselves it's the truth. I love the fact that I'm proven wrong on something that I swore on this show. I was like desk pounding. You will never get chrome on her. And I'm completely wrong. Now, if it's stable, even better, but technically I'm wrong.
Well, this certainly does open up a lot of possibilities in bringing alive some old devices, laptops and so forth.
Oh, I go to click the script error 404. What's up with that?
What?
Oh, it's a Dropbox link. So Dropbox got 6 and tired. Yeah. Dropbox couldn't handle the bandwidth. Or they suspended his account or something.
I clicked on it, got it immediately.
Oh, I'm in Firefox, not with any ad blocking or anything. So I'm in hold Chrome. On to that script. Yeah, hold on to that for me and put in the notes for me. You know what I mean? Or give me a link to it so I can get it. Yeah, so I just think this is really cool. Now, I know you said, Rich, you have a list full of things. And the only thing I know is that you were looking at like moving stuff and you were taking a look at the Odroid XU4 again for repurposing, or did you have to nuke and pave?
Yeah, I actually nuked and paved. So I had the, and forgive me if I get it wrong, I believe it's like the 1.5x diet pie and they didn't give you an upgrade path.
Yeah, it was it became 1.59 to 6.
Right. And it became highly unstable. I don't know why. I was doing like apt updates on it and it wouldn't run for more than like half an hour. I had a couple of issues that I fixed. I talked about that on a prior podcast. My etcf stab got like crudded up badly by me and it was slightly more stable after that. But I did nuke and pave. I did install, Plex again. So Plex, radar, sonar, transmission, you know, that whole suite. That's kind of my de facto suite. And I also have my HC1 running with similar software here at my Orlando crash pad. And I found a script. I love GitHub. You have no idea what I love about GitHub. There's many things I love about GitHub, but what I like about it best is if you're running a Debian-based operating system, you can find what was intended to be an Intel install script for something and run it on ARM. So, I know I posted about this somewhere. Thing that I had to change.
Just really quick, that matters because DiePie is based on Armbian, which is based on Debian. But give me an example of what you mean, like what kind of script?
Okay, so the script, darn you, drinking beer in front of us.
Oh, yeah.
So the, I'm day 3 on Nutrisystems, so I'm about to, my bird is looking pretty tasty right now. He doesn't know I'm talking bad about him.
You can't catch him.
Yeah, I can. He's sleeping right now. So one of the things that I've been running on my Odroid XU4 is Time Capsule. And Time Capsule is just a couple of scripts, but unfortunately, some of the services have been deprecated and aren't normally in the Debian repo. But I found a script online on GitHub that installs it, compiles it, the whole shoot and match, and, you know, just totally simple, stupid.
So like instead of doing a dev install, you're doing like a source make config.
Correct.
Yeah, so you're building it from source, basically.
Right. And the only thing I had to change was, change it to ARM, you know, where the file name was like blah, 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 x86 or whatever it was to ARM.
Hey, and now bang. That's nice.
So I'm like, hey, wait, I'm copying and pasting out of this page. It's not. I'm like, dude, read the page. Read what you're doing. I'm like, oh, yeah, because my code's different.
So here's one thing I never knew about Debian. If you could take that, because what I would like to do is in that process, have it save like a result of it as a deb file, and then you put it in your own stash. So if you need it again, you
can. Yeah, you know, I didn't do that. Darn it. You know, we keep talking about backups. Yeah, why not?
It exists. I only make software from scratch infrequently, and typically I just go git clone source, run a script, done.
Yeah, I know somewhere I either bookmarked or saved or whatever that page with the script. Oh, I think it might be in my Google Drive. But yeah, GitHub is great for install scripts, you know, shell scripts for doing installs. So there, I forgot there was another thing that I did. Oh, yeah, I did it. There was another one. Installing KVM on the Rockchip 64. So I installed Armbian on the Rockchip 64, and I want to play with virtualization, and I was trying out KVM, and I had an issue with that. Is that like, how big is that beer? How many ounces? That looks huge.
Just the normal size. It's like a 16-ouncer.
Yeah?
12.
Did they shrink the size of beer?
No, apparently I have a small head, and I thought it was big. Oh.
Oh, that's when you hold it close to the camera, it looks huge.
It looks very delicious.
I thought you had like the Colt 45 of Yingling.
No. But I will say that is a really good solution, because I'll say this. Sometimes the hardest thing to do on the ARM-based systems is what a lot of people take for granted as being the easiest thing to do. I like the fact that you found, and it doesn't take an extreme knowledge of Linux to do this, but you got to know where to go to look for this kind of thing. So that's cool.
Yep. So, okay, Nuke and Pave on the Odroid, Plex server, Diet Pi, so I'm in the 1.6 range, which I think was a 32-bit to 64-bit jump, and that's why I really want to recompile the time capsule so it all run 64-bit. The other thing I did is one of my drives, so the Odroid has two USB 3.0 drives, and one of the drives is for time capsule, the other drive is for media for the Plex server. And the 3 terabyte drive was getting full, and I had a 5 terabyte Costco drive from Seagate, that is. And it has two USB 3.0 ports on the front. So I shut it down. I swapped the drives around. So in other words, the Seagate drive with the daisy chain port on the front, I plugged in first, and then I plugged in the drive with all the media into that. Booted, you can do the Diet Pi drive tools, I think it is, drive tools, and mount the drive, you know, change the name because it wants to use like a UUID for the name, change the name to something nice. I just did an SCP, copied all my files over from one drive to the other, and then I changed in the FSTAB the names, you know. So it's like external USB 02. So it was USB 03, and I changed it to USB 02. Did a mount space dash A, boom, everything was attached, correct. And I'm running off that drive now. So that was really a very easy way to upgrade. And the cool thing about these Seagates with, and not like I'm an advocate of Seagate, I'm not saying Seagate's better than anything, but the cool thing about the Seagate is that it has the two USB ports up front, 3.0. And if you're on a device that has a limited number of USB 3.0 ports and you're using that for mass storage, that's a great freaking solution. Because the Rockchip 64, the low-end Pine, not the Rock Pro, only has one USB 3 port. And if you wanted to plug multiple drives into that, I mean, you could put a USB hub onto it, but usually I don't trust cheapy USB hubs. I really want to spend a little more money on that and make sure I got the throughput. And I have a reasonable amount of confidence that the throughput, I didn't measure it, but I know the copy did go rather quickly. So I was pretty happy about that.
Yeah, I would expect it to at least be fair, like not at all, you know, depressed at the results. I think good. Me with hubs, I'm kind of a stickler. I want better built powered hubs almost always. I like the fact that it's a hard drive manufacturer with that technology built into it automatically, because I know they've already taken into consideration power needs to make sure that they're doing it right, kind of thing, is the thing. So that sounds like a really nice drive to have. And do you know how big that model goes up to?
Well, that's the same one that they have 8 terabytes right now in sale for $129, which I'm definitely picking one of them up. What was the Mel Gibson movie? Was it Conspiracy Theory, where he had to buy Catcher in the Rye all the time?
Yeah.
I'm like that with drive storage. I'm a little wacky about that.
Well, yes, but Catcher in the Rye was supposedly a message to the government that to come to them. Right. So maybe you shouldn't be like that.
They so totally know where I am. I got nothing to worry about.
Well, that's cool. And so your main board is the XU4.
Yeah, that's really, and it's no longer the data center in the drawer. It's like the data center in the cabinet. And yeah, that's my main workhorse. So sticking with Odroid stuff, the next thing I did is I did purchase an HC1, which, if I got it right, that's the 2.5-inch drive device. So it's an Odroid XU4 internals. You don't get any USB 3 ports. You don't get any pin headers, but you do get a SATA, and it's got a monster heat sink. I think it's only like 40-something bucks and change. It's pretty reasonably priced. Where your Odroid, with all the bells and whistles, is more money. I think it's either low 60s, around there. And I'm sorry, I'm kind of doing this from memory. Anyhow, nuked and paved the HC1 because it only has a Cat5 port on it, and it does have one USB. I threw a USB dongle, Wi-Fi dongle on it, but I did copy everything over because, you know, when you're nuking and paving, the only way to talk to it is over the network because there's no display port, no HDMI or anything on it. So you got to SSH into it. And so I set everything up with the Cat5. I bought a cheapy, laptop drive, 2.5-inch drive from Costco. Costco is like my media dealer. And the weird thing was I was noticing that it was taking, you know, a copy of a 45-minute movie was taking 45 minutes to copy. I'm like, what the flock? And I looked on my switch port. And, you know, like all the lights are on if it's gigabit, and this device is gigabit. I had to SSH into it, open a new window, issue a command to increase the speed to gigabit speed. So in case you're getting poor performance for some reason on your ARM device and it's supposed to be gigabit and it's not working at gigabit speed, check out the NIC speed and how to kick up the speed on that. So that worked really good. I have some redneck engineered ductwork on it, and I have a 100-millimeter fan on it, or is it 80-millimeter? I got to check. Anyhow, just because I did see some cooling issues or heating issues, if you would say, so I want to 3D print, you know, just kind of a nicer top and a bottom for it. So I have the fin side up right now, and I have a fan and some, you know, blue taped cardboard around it, creating a duct in an area for air to move over it. So I want to modify that a bit. What else? Oh, I set up, I got Haspian running, which is Home Automation Assistant. And just because I like monkeying with it or kind of expanding it, and I have it doing things at my house, nothing mission critical, but just nice to haves, you know, lights going on and off automatically, that kind of thing. There's other things it does, but for the most part, that's the main thing it does. I had MQTT and OwnTrack set up because I want it to track my device, my phone. And two things, what I used to have it doing is when it detected me coming home, it would turn like the office light on. The other thing I want to do is when it knows I leave, or when I arrive in Orlando and I left Palm Beach within 3 hours, that it sends a text message to my wife that I got to Orlando okay. I want to have it do that automatically because I often forget. And along with that is I want to put Node-RED on so I can do like more complex programming. And apparently Node-RED has a home automation assistant plugin. So it's not like... there was an easy way to do it, but not from Haspian, which is Home Automation Assistant on Raspbian Image already. And I was like, oh, crap, that stinks. And then I just found some other articles, and all you do is install Node-RED, plain vanilla, normal. And then there's a couple of, you know, plugins you can select from and select the Home Automation Assistant, and it'll work. So I haven't done that yet. I'm kind of excited to do that. I've got incredible PBX running originally on my Pi 3, and I threw it over on a Pi 0. I nuked and paved my Octoprint on my 3D printer. I finally pulled it out of the garage. It's been about a year since I printed. I changed the hot end on it, which I forgot if it was $5 or $10. So new thermistor, wire, plug ends, all of that. Ridiculous cheap. I think, I got it on Amazon. So kind of getting up to speed with Octoprint again, which was, it's amazing when you walk away from this stuff, how much you forget.
Yeah, I mean, it goes quick. And I will say, I want to see if there's anything personal in this, which I don't think there is. If there is, I can't share it. But if there isn't, I'll put it in the notes. It's a time lapse using Octolapse, which is a plugin for Octoprint that I think turned out like really good time lapse, even though the top of the dragon's head's cut off because the camera wasn't facing up enough. But I love 3D printer. I think it's freaking awesome.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah,
nice video.
I think it's just really cool. I will say also really quick, Rich, the one device that I don't have anymore, I actually gave one to Dan Fry because, you know, he's a cool guy. Line 765 in the notes. I literally just put it in there. When I have a device like that, because I do have devices like that, devices that have basically no video output on them whatsoever, I liked having this device. It's a Edimax N150. I don't believe they actually make this anymore, but they do make other things that are basically just like it. The gimmick is you take a short Ethernet cable. It doesn't need to be long. Literally, like a millimeter long is long enough. You can have, you know, 3 inches or whatever. You plug up the Ethernet jack from the single board computer to this. Then you plug the USB into the USB socket for power only. And then what you do is you program this to be a Wi-Fi access point that connects to your home network. So you can reflash any hardware you want. And if you don't want to worry about configuring the Wi-Fi or physically connecting an Ethernet cable, you can just plug this up to it and you know it's going to connect. And you know what IP address it's going to get because it's the same MAC address. So you can do MAC address in your router. So it's really easy to get into freshly flashed devices.
Hey, can you put that in the chat door? I'd like to take a look at that. Rich, I was going to ask you, I don't know if you said this already, but with your new install on your XU4, do you notice a performance increase moving from 32-bit to 64-bit?
Don't hear you, Rich.
Sorry, I guess I wasn't on my mumble window. Because it's headless, it's tough to say. Nothing has dragged or been slow or sluggish. So I can say it's definitely performing, no issues. But for the most part, I'm headless on almost everything. And actually, I'm probably only halfway through the list here of what I've been up to. So my up squared, I also nuked and paved because on the last podcast, I talked about OpenCV. And ideally, what I want to be doing is having something like a FOSCAM just continuously panning. And a FOSCAM, the FOSCAM I'm talking about is like an R2-D2. It does pan and tilt. And mount it at the corner of my house and just have it pan through the area and do facial recognition. Well, the camera's not going to do that. But something like the up squared can. And I've been loading it with OpenCV and the libraries to do it, but I only got so far on it. And unfortunately, like there was one library I thought I was going to use, but it reaches out to other systems to do the object recognition. And I want everything, you know, I don't want anything leaving my network. I don't want that going on. Because in one thing, Dor and I have been having a conversation about this. There used to be a saying in the 80s, other people's money, and more recently, people talk about other people's computing. But when you trust somebody else to do something for you, you got to hope they do that forever or they don't change it on you somehow, slightly, which I had recently. Like I scrape content and build an RSS feed off one site and they just changed where the date appeared, which bump, you know, blew my process. I'm like, oh, did I break this? No, they broke it. I didn't break it. You know, I'm always going through what I break first. And that's one of the things I'm trying to avoid by, you know, there's security issues about keeping everything on your network and not sharing it with the world. But the other thing is, if you own everything, then you know when it's changed and broken. And if you do podcasts and blogging, you definitely have a record of what you did, so you can go back to that and refer to it. So,
go ahead.
Go, Brian.
No, I was going to say that definitely has its pluses, but I noticed when you do tend to roll your own, you need to manage it too as well, and that can sometimes become daunting and time-consuming if you do a lot of implementation of what you're talking about.
Yeah, so you hit on the bad point about that. And like when I powered up the 3D printer and I was trying to get Octoprint running, I had a bit of a learning curve because I forgot all of the magic stuff. And I'm like, hey, let's just nuke and pave this. And then I realized, oh, I had all of the push bullet plug-in. I had the PID plug-in. I had, you know, there are a number of plug-ins that I didn't. I'm like, oh, I got to reload those plug-ins. And then the Cura connectivity. And you know what? There are some things that nobody else is going to do, that nobody else is the Uber sysadmin. Sometimes it's got to be you. And unfortunately, yeah, I do spread myself thin, and then I walk away from it for a year. So that's why copious notes are always good.
Oh, yeah. Document, document, document.
Yeah, and backups, 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 too. I mean, I will say I do believe having root is desirable, but when you have root, just like you're saying, Brian, then you have to take ownership of it and embrace it and not strangle it and kill it. You have to actually nourish it. And it is sometimes work. And it all matters how you have it set up and what systems you have them set up on. I'm in favor of root, honestly, for the exercise of doing it, because then I have to learn this stuff. If I'm just, you know, if I don't have root, then I don't care about it. But I like having the control, especially because I know if something breaks, it wasn't me. Yeah, I took a screenshot today and I shared it with some coworkers. It was an exe on our domain at work. It was compiled in September 1998, and it was the last time I had to compile that code. And it's still running today on the network, and people are still accessing it. And it's been 20 years.
That's amazing.
Funny.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's a legacy.
Well, I mean, that means that you wrote something solid and not flaky. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. I'd be shocked if anything I've written is, you know, going to be working for more than 9 months, you know, the way things move now. It also, because I'm reaching out to other resources. So the RSS feed generator that I scrape data from this one site for flyingrich.com. See, I got the plug-in. See how clever that was? you know, it scrapes content from another site and builds an RSS feed and plugs into the code on my site. And yeah, the second they change it, boom, you're done. You got to work it.
Well, yes, but you have a choice of soft failing or hard failing.
Well, yeah, and the soft fail is the content from that site didn't show up.
Well, and you code for it, and you then get alerted by when stuff go boom instead of just letting it go boom.
And that or the Mach 1 eyeball, because I'm not getting alerted. I do have to write that in. That would be a good one.
Yeah, but and it's just more work.
Yeah. Yeah, then just looking at your code and trying to remember how you wrote that. Even though it's not that complex, it's like, what was I doing there? Oh, okay, I got it.
That was pretty smart. That's a smart thing to do.
No. I'll say most of the time when I go back and look at any code I wrote, I think, what the hell was I thinking? This is horrible.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's bad. When I left a company and the people that worked for me, because I was, you know, managed 5 people at that company, they got stuck with managing code. I'm like, I have to apologize. This is the worst code I've ever written. It was never supposed to be what it is. And I got like, okay, can you just display this on a web page? That was all of a sudden that became an accounting system. So it was brutally, absolutely the worst thing I've ever written. I was absolutely horrified other people are going to be maintaining it. But anyhow, let's see. Oh, and as I was setting up all these devices on my network, I found a Git script, which I forked, and I put my own information in. Or a script on a shell script on GitHub. Let me say that right. And what it does is it installs the SNMP service, and then all I have to do is attach it to Observium. So I just do a Git clone on the device, and I may have to install Git, and then boom, just run the shell script, and bang, it installs the SNMP daemon and configures the what do you call it? The, why can't I think, SNMP, it's a string, no, it's something else. Anyhow, whatever the text file is with the configuration, and boom, now I'm monitoring it with Observium. I threw OpenSUSE on the Pi 3 to test out KVM, and the GUI just was so slow, it was ridiculous. Couldn't, absolutely useless. Maybe if you just SSH into it and no GUI, that's fine. But I did kind of abandon the OpenSUSE because I wanted to test out virtualization in ARM. I threw Armbian on the ROC 64, and I did the server version with a GUI, added the GUI afterwards. Because if you do the desktop version, it adds, you know, LibreOffice, all sorts of stuff user want, and I don't want it. But what I did do is, I forget what UI I added to it, but I found another script on GitHub that will do the installation of KVM. And I got KVM up and running, although I wasn't able to create a VM. It squawked about UEFI. So once I figure that out, hopefully there's a solution to it. I'll be able to get virtualization on my ROC 64 working.
That's pretty sweet.
So I kind of, on my whiteboard, I wrote like things I wanted to do and just like really hardcore worked down that list. And I still have a list up there. I added more things.
Well, you seem to be a lot more proactive than I am.
you gotta finally say, hey, I've had no movement in these areas. I'm working this. And also when you hit a block, like with the up squared and the OpenCV, I'm like, all right, I'm moving to something else. This isn't productive right now. Let me jump on something else and just change gears and we kept going.
Yeah, the OpenCV app, there is also an Android. It literally in the category called demo, where it is OpenCV. You don't need network connectivity, and it will do a certain amount of identification of objects in the camera. And I think that's awesome.
And you mentioned OpenCV last show is Open Computer Vision. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, I've been using it. I didn't even look up what it was. So yeah, there is stuff out there. I think the one Dora's talking about is designed to run on ARM devices and have a very small footprint.
Very cool, very cool. Here's the question I have for you, Rich. Have you thought of doing a type of, and I'm going to say it wrong, but a federation? Because here's my logic. Your big drive in your big device, is there anywhere off-site that you are synchronizing it with in case of catastrophe or emergency?
No, and so, okay, there's two drives. So my Odroid XU4 has two hard drives hooked up to it. One is the time capsule backup, and the other is the media. And actually, I do have a copy pretty much of the media on the HC1 at my Orlando crash pad here, which is actually the thing that I'm least concerned about. The stuff that I really is unique on the planet is my time capsule backups. And an R disk and, you know, just do a copy.
So you don't have anything offsite?
Nah, nothing offsite. Yeah, with the end of crash plan, yeah, I do not have offsite backup anymore.
Well, where did you have offsite backup with them?
Well, basically everything was backing up locally and to crash plan.
Oh, to the cloud.
The crash plan, yeah.
Yeah, screw that. What I want to do is literally have a off-prem Pi device with an ARM with a drive connected, literally drive's gonna be so cheap here kind of thing. Somewhere else where I'm doing some sort of synchronization of data back and, you know, back, at least between the two. My buddy who lives not far from me, I shared with him a couple of things, and they were like 4 gig files. And I'm thinking to myself, he has enough content that he needs stuff backed up. I have enough content. I need stuff backed up. Why don't I have just 2 Pi devices in each locale? All it would take from a nerd perspective is to have both of them do a daily time sync check. And then shortly thereafter the time sync check, one of them enable an SSH connection to the other, and then just do an rsync back over command.
Thank you. I knew rdisk was wrong. It's rsync. Sorry.
Yeah, and then just do that, and I essentially have an offsite backup. Now, the gimmick is if you want to worry about, you know, times of day, bandwidth usage, it's just easy through cron, you just have to time. It's not difficult. And I keep wanting to do it, and then I keep asking myself, why am I doing it local? Why am I not doing it multiple states away? Because it's very cheap and affordable, and it's honestly easy to maintain. All you have to do is, when it's done, have it send anything out in any kind of communication, whether it be an SMS, text, an email, or a Twitter DM, just saying transfer successful.
Yep.
You would have to be on a secure transfer VPN.
Oh, VPN, tunnel. Yeah.
Well, yeah, SSH. What the trick for me would be, is there a way I could set my firewall up to, at a certain time, open the port, and then a certain time, turn it back off? And that's what I don't know if I have the ability to do. I know on the device, I can say, you know, only accept connections during this time.
You could use a third-party VPN provider.
But then I'm relying on somebody else.
Right, right.
Then, you know, if I'm doing that, then why don't I just sync them both to, like, Google Drive or Dropbox or something?
Right, right, yeah. And originally that was my plan, is 20 minutes away at my in-laws, I was going to throw a Raspberry Pi 3 with a, you know, USB drive and have that as the remote crash plan. Now, tell me if this is all sorts of dumb. At the Hughes Compound Southern Command, there's the Southern Outpost, or the launch head, which has power in it. I was thinking about just putting a hard drive and a Pi out there and using that as the, you know, out of the master compound backup.
Well, that's actually a pretty good idea, because the who you're trying to get away from is if there's ever like a fire or something like that at your location.
Yeah, some catastrophic disaster, you know, whether it's theft or fire or whatever, yeah.
I've been actually thinking of the same thing a few years ago and never implemented it, but pretty much the same scenario. I know my in-laws, they have internet service that they barely ever use. So why not just take a Pi with a large drive and send data during the wee hours of the night?
Yeah, and here's the thing. I'm so lazy here's how lazy I am. Knowing me, that's probably not the solution I would do, but I would try to achieve the same results possible. And like the brandest new version of Nextcloud does offer direct encryption in every shape, way, or form, peer-to-peer, from client to server. I could see literally putting a configured Nextcloud client on a device and have my Nextcloud server here, and then literally just say on his device, check on the time, okay, start the actual client up, run it for 4 hours in the middle of the night, and then turn it off, kill the client, wait, do another time check, the next night enable it, just to do synchronization. Because really, Nextcloud own cloud, I think, has 80% of the functionality for that just built right in. And I don't know why I wouldn't take advantage of it, because I tell you right now, my own cloud I have running on the Banana Pi Pro is the most solid thing I think I've ever ran in my life. And I do believe it's possible to get similar type experience out of dissimilar hardware and Nextcloud. But I think, unfortunately, it's going to require me to do Docker, because I cannot find a stable version of installable Nextcloud on the ROC 64 to save my life. So I think I'm going to have to do a container.
Well, what operating system are you using?
I've tried DietPi. I've tried Armbian. I've tried...
Really?
Yeah, I've tried multiple.
So in other than Raspberry Pi vanilla stuff, definitely DietPi is my go-to. And Armbian, if I can't do it in DietPi, it works in Armbian. And I'm kind of shocked on that.
Yeah, the... what's it called? Resi. There's some server that's running with the Nextcloud instance, and I have the Let's Encrypt thing running as well. But there's another server service running on the computer on the instance that never seems to work. Redis, I believe it's called. It just does not work, and whenever I try to log in, it just does not work right. On every other version, I like reboot the hardware and then it doesn't reboot. And then I hit the power button and it doesn't reboot. Then I hit reboot and it doesn't reboot. Then I hit the power button and then it does come back up. So it's not a stable operating system, is the way that I look at it. And I've left it run for a couple of days when I did get it to boot. And then within 4 days, it just seized and locked up. That was the official Pine ROC 64 through the Etcher Nextcloud Pi install. When I did DietPi, it did boot up every time, ran fine, but I could not get the Redis server to run right. And if I can't get the Redis server to run right, I can't have confidence that when I do upgrades and updates, stuff's going to work.
Right. Have you tried Open Media Vault?
Open Media Vault doesn't do any of what I need it to do.
Well, Open Media Vault has gazillions of plugins.
Now,
right.
What I need, I right now have 20 plus people connect all over the United States and some people outside of the U.S. to my server. They have like a Dropbox client installed on their computer and files synchronize when they put it in that folder down to my server and vice versa. When I put it in the folder, it syncs to their computer when I do editing and stuff for shows. So the primary use case for this server is outside of my network, and I don't trust Open Media Vault to work over the public internet.
Roger, roger.
And I really want Nextcloud to work. The own cloud's still working fine. Don't get me wrong. It's still working just fine. But I know that it is going to slowly keep losing traction is what I'll say. Did you have any links in the notes, Brian, or did you have a chance to look at anything and did it catch your eye?
I did, actually. I think we had the same device. It was the Lada Panda Alpha, which is the soul of a MacBook and a pocket-sized board.
And people have been getting the, I believe, Mojave OS running on that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. McMake had a video on it, and he pointed to somebody else who did the actual install. So if you look up McMake's video where he reviews that, he has a link to the guy that, you know, the how-to do the installation.
Huh, that's pretty cool. I know they're toting Windows 10 OS. But if you look at this port, it looks like a beast. It does look pretty cool. Obviously, the only downside is the price. And we're looking at $300 plus for a device like this.
Yeah, I don't want to say this was a crazy price, but it's kind of a crazy price.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is a definite not a low-end device in any shape or form.
No, not at all. I mean, you have your usual suspects with the gig interface for Ethernet. 4K capable, playing 4K video playback, Bluetooth 4.2, 8 gigs of RAM. I'm not too sure on the processor.
It's a Intel i3 processor, and I believe it's a desktop i3 processor.
Supports NVMe, what you were toting before earlier. That's a huge bonus when you have a device like this with NVMe M.2 support. Just, it makes that huge difference when you're doing installations like you guys were talking about before, installing software. And the Intel HD graphics, 900 megahertz.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely a fan of the power and the size of this thing, but I don't see myself spending the money on it just because it is a little bit expensive for me.
No, I agree. It's that if you need the form factor and didn't want to buy someone else's box, this would be the go-to.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the best word I think I can use for it is sexy.
A sexy beast.
Yeah, it's a Intel Cherry Trail Z8350 quad-core 1.8 gigahertz processor. It is, I believe, of the newest generation i3s. It starts out with 2 gigabytes of RAM. You can push it up. Starts out with 32 gigs of internal storage that you can push up. Then it has, you know, all your typical good connections and ports. There's a reason this thing is not cheap, and that's because this thing is definitely nice.
Oh, and it also has, oh gosh, what's the super small SBC? Arduino. It has an Arduino on it.
Yeah, baked into the board. It looks like, yeah.
Yeah, if I'd have some throwing around money, I think I would drop a few $100 in this. I really would, just because I can.
Yeah, and then the heat sink on it definitely looks like it's there for business purposes kind of thing.
Yeah, it's definitely, it has a fan for cooling. We got USB Type-C, micro SD, DC power, like I said before, that M.2 interface. Comes with a power switch, USB 3.0, USB 3.0 ports. Like I said before, that cooling fan, HDMI out.
Yeah, and the Type-C does support the DisplayPort.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was reading the wrong one. This is a Intel 7th Gen Core M37Y30, 1.6 to 2.6 gigahertz dual core, four threaded, hyper threading. Especially if it's still around and it's still used on devices here in the next year, that'll be a good feature. Wow, this thing is a beast.
Yeah, looking at the performance benchmarks, it looks like it's doing beating out the Core i5, 7th Gen Core i5 Intel processor.
See, that's good for so many things. And if I don't know if it has a display port, an HDMI port, and I forget what ports it has because I haven't been looking at the specs in the last week or so. If I had the money to throw around, like if I got a good bonus, I'd pick one up.
Yeah, I fully agree with you, Rich. I mean, you can do a heck of a lot of fun with this thing.
Might be good to do the OpenCV on. Or, I mean, heck, having a Mojave drive both my monitors on my desk at home, that'd be cool.
I'm curious to know how loud that fan is, though, when it's in full throttle.
It's a, you know, bigger diameter fans aren't as noisy, so it may not be so bad.
I don't think it has multiple display output. Looks like just one HDMI.
Yeah, I think it has one HDMI, but I think the USB 3 is... Yeah, you know what? Mick wrote me back. It's a USB 3.1 port, and you can hang a display off that.
I was going to ask you that, yeah. I see the USB-C, Type-C.
Right, right.
3.0. Maybe you can, like you said, have a video out of that port.
Yeah, he said he did it, and it worked.
Nice. Actually, it looks like on the board, there is a touch panel. Mm-hmm. Looks like a display, an EDP for a touch panel.
Dor, I added to the mini links the Time Machine script.
Gotcha.
So if anybody out there in ARM world wants to add, or any world actually, Intel or ARM, wants to add Time Machine to their device, they can do it.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty cool feature.
Well, that's, you know, pretty much if it's Debian, it runs on everything Debian runs on. So that's one of the cool things.
How about you, Dor? What did you have on the agenda?
Well, I hate to say, but what I really have on the agenda is probably going to spend a little bit of money. Not like the $300 thing, though, because, you know, this is Dor you're talking to. But line 756 on the notes is actually a link to Thingiverse, which might seem weird, maybe, to some people, I'll say. But if you take a look at the actual link, it's basically a hardware commodities list, and then a case you can 3D print to what they're calling the HyperPixel 4 and Raspberry Pi 3B Plus handheld computing device. That is a touchscreen panel with a Raspberry Pi built in with a completely customizable keyboard with a board. I can't remember the name of the board, with a Teensy board connected, and the Teensy board is what connects the physical keys to the computer. So it's like a truly customized keyboard, battery in it, touchscreen video output. Then they have it side by side showing it off to the I can't remember the name of the board, the pocket chip. They have it sitting right next to the pocket chip, and it looks to be about the exact same form factor and size, but it's basically completely customizable is the gimmick. I want to build this. I want to buy the pieces. I want to put it together. And the real goal is to see if I can replace the board inside with something more powerful, more potent than a Raspberry Pi, even though a Raspberry Pi would be perfectly fine for a lot of the things. But if I could slip an Odroid in here or something more potent, that would be, like, awesome.
Wow. So what would you do with this thing?
Well, I mean, I would do retro gaming. I would definitely do some sort of local note-taking documentation thing. I could write little scripts on it, too. So when I come home, I can just drop them in a rotation to do things like synchronizing files across networks kind of thing. And I would definitely have an installation of Kali bootable, but that would be my default one.
Kali, huh? Nice.
Well, it isn't that I want to go to jail, but I think, you know, Kali's cool. I love the fact that it is basically a full keyboard, a directional pad, and a touchscreen interface. and it didn't seem crazy. It didn't seem crazy expensive. The screen itself was almost always the most expensive part, and that was $49.95. And if that's the most expensive piece and everything else looks like it's 18, 20 bucks or less kind of thing, I'm okay with that. Yeah, so I might be trying to do this before the holiday season. I don't know.
Well, it definitely looks like a cool project. I could see you doing this, actually.
Well, and I do know if I print the keys in TPU, they would be much more friendly to fingertips kind of thing.
So what material could you get? Is it like a rubbery kind of material for the keys?
Yeah, like I just bought a case off of eBay for my phone, and it's made out of TPU is the name of the material, and it literally said in the thing TPU. And the case I'm going to show the camera, I can literally do this to, and it just will bounce right back because it's TPU. I have the same material I can print in there that is TPU, so I can do basically the exact same thing. I would do the case in more of a hard, rigid PLA type structure, but I would do the keys in this more flexible material just so it's more, giving kind of thing.
Plus it'll last longer too.
Well, the trick would be, how would I get the different color there to show the letter? Because really I should do that. So to do that, I would really need a dual extruder, or I would need a lot of talent, and I don't have a lot of talent.
YouTube it.
Yeah, so I don't know. I would really like to do this. It really is not expensive. And I'll say this, a listener of the shows bought me the phone. So because of that savings, I think I can do this. Yeah, and on the Thingiverse link where it documents all this, it basically says that this is a work in progress. So some stuff might change. So it's the kind of thing I might wait a couple weeks, because it was updated three days ago. So I might wait and see when it comes a little bit stable.
Cool, cool. Did you guys bring up the NanoPi M4?
Dor, you posted a link to that on Google Plus, I think.
If it's what I think it is, I think we did bring it up, but it was weeks and weeks ago, and we just we didn't go into any details about it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was looking at your post that that Rich talked about, and I was kind of taken back by not only the form factor, but what you can actually get on this board.
Yeah, I did see postings for it. I did see videos on it as well. And I like it because it is a Rock Chip 3399 processor. The more stuff I see out there that has this processor in it, the better I feel, because it's going to be, it was already announced in Chromebooks. I don't think they're released yet. That support alone is going to mean a lot. But it is a good processor for everything I read. My experience on it with Rock Pro is not great or grand, but that's because there hasn't been enough development on it yet. But it's a good chip. And this looks like a really nice, nice one. This was the one, I'm 99.99% sure, this was the device where the heatsink was ginormous. Yeah, scroll down. Look at the size of that friggin' heatsink. It is bigger than the whole device.
Yeah, it is pretty big.
Yeah, I put a link to a CNX-software. And here's the thing. If it needs it, I'm okay with a heatsink being that big.
Now, this is another one of those boards where you can do quite a bit with and have a little bit of fun. I'm not too sure on the price, though.
Yeah, that's what we said.
They ain't that much. They're typically at most $120. Smaller ones like this, I want to say, are typically around $70 about.
Yeah, I can definitely get behind that. Absolutely.
Yeah, looks like $129. This is a friendly Elect board, is the NanoPi. And I have had fine luck, what I'll say, with the friendly Elect. I'm not going to say that they're like the best ever, but I definitely had at least moderate success with them.
Oh, there it is. Thanks for the link.
Yeah, and it has like default 4 gigs of RAM, micro SD, actually has a power button, Type-C connector, and this was the Type-C connector. I can't remember if it had this display port or not. Does have a DC in, gigabit neck, only one USB 3 audio out, HDMI, two USB ports. I definitely like the look of this board.
What kills me, it's the same form factor as the Raspberry Pi.
Four USB 3.0 ports, that's pretty hot. Real-time clock. Oh, is that a real-time clock connector or a real-time clock? And it says it has eMMC socket, but that looks different. Or the EMC, eMMC is a different configuration.
Yeah. There's different ones. Yeah. This is definitely a weird-looking socket. What I think it is, literally, it's a little add-on board you got to buy for like $7 that you like plug into it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like Friendly Elect. Honestly, I have like two of their boards, and they run fine. They definitely don't run cold. They definitely run a little bit warm, but they actually...
That was going to be my next question.
But they actually do run fine. I had this one running Node-RED up, running for 30 days with no problems. I have a huge heatsink on it, but it ran with no problems.
Not like the Banana Pi.
Well, nothing like the Banana Pi. Yeah, this is a Nano Pi Neo. I believe it's the very first one, the one that does not have Wi-Fi built on the board.
Yeah, I would definitely be interested in checking this out. And I would, of course, I want the 4 gig version.
Oh, absolutely. The more the better.
But that could be a real screamer.
Yeah, there's the M4 and then there's the T4. They're really nice boards is what I'm going to say. But, you know, I'm going to only buy right now one ROC 3399 processor and be patient buying my next one. Very cool. Did you guys have any other links that you wanted to bring up?
No, I'm actually pretty good, Tor.
Very cool. All right, Rich, did you have any parting words?
No, just good seeing all you guys, and you can follow me and all of my tech exploits at flyingrich.com. I did post stuff as I was doing it on Google+, the stuff that I ran off on my list. I was posting, information about that on Google+, which also would be on flyingrich.com.
Very cool. Brian, did you have any things that you wanted to say?
No, I kind of agree with Rich. It was good seeing you guys, chatting with you, hearing what you've been up to, Rich. You've been certainly busy. It's good to hear stuff like that. I definitely have been a little too busy myself to be on the show, and I got to get back into being on here a lot more often.
Very cool. I definitely want to thank everyone for coming out. Thank everyone for downloading. Thanks, everyone, for all the support. Do not forget, this is Mini PC Show. Little Machines, Big Talk. All you got to do is send us a voicemail if you want. You can call us up at 707-6-PODNUT. Drop us a line. We will play your response on the show. And we hope you guys are having just as much fun with these mini computers as we are. And we will talk to everyone again real soon.
This is Martin from PodNuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other PodNuts shows on the PodNuts Network. And we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.